Welcome to the Perry Johnson Registrars Podcast, where you can expect the latest news and discussions related to the management systems certification industry. Today's episode is a previously recorded webinar. If you would like to tune in to our upcoming webinars, visit our website at www.pjr.com/webinar or give us a follow on your favorite podcast app. Thank you for tuning in.
Presentation. This is Virtual Audits, explaining PJR's approach and expectations with some recent updates. My name is Joseph Krolikowski. I am the QMS Program Manager for PJR. Now, our topics for today, we're going to be going over some background information. We'll talk about where virtual audit policy comes from. We'll look at how PJR analyzes whether a virtual audit is even possible and what options we can take. We'll talk about the virtual audit process kind of step by step, and we'll segue into expectations both for audit reporting and nonconformances. And we'll round out with a couple concluding remarks and your questions. Now, we have been doing virtual audits essentially since the start of the COVID-19 pandemic. We rolled this out roughly late March of 2020, and then for all of 2020 and 2021, our approach to remote audit approval was a presumption, if you will, that the request was rooted in the COVID-19 pandemic. And at that time, that obviously made perfect sense. Now that we're approaching the end of 2022, vaccination rates have gone up significantly. COVID-19 case numbers have dropped dramatically in a lot of places. It's getting harder now to justify a remote audit taking place just due to COVID-19. Now, additionally, there's been some other more sensitive data that has shown that remote audits are likely less effective than on-site audits. And this has particularly been the case in production areas. Now, you have to understand that is a perception that is coming from clients, from auditors, internally here at PJR, and in the industry at large, stakeholders, folks that require certification, and so forth. Now, in terms of official policy on remote auditing, we are still working from the two primary IAF documents, those being IAF ID3. This is Management of Extraordinary Event or Circumstances Affecting. That stands for accreditation bodies, certification assessment bodies, and certified organizations. And then also IAF MD4. The use of information and communication technology, or ICT, for auditing and assessment purposes. Now, both of those documents are public domain, just like any other IAF document. So if you'd like to get copies of those two for yourselves, you simply go to IAF.nu and follow their documents link, and you'll find those two documents. You can download them yourself. So in terms of the process that we are following, we've tried to structure this to meet ID3 and MD4 as closely as possible. So before a virtual audit can be approved, we have to do what's referred to as a risk-based assessment. We have to analyze, is it possible to do the remote audit? Is it necessary to do the remote audit? And can we uphold the same effectiveness as what we would have on site? Now, we issued a special document to capture this assessment. It's called the F108 ICT. This goes back to 2020, of course, when we rolled out our program. In early 2022, we made some significant changes to this document. To try to pivot towards virtual auditing that takes place for more reasons than just the pandemic. So our F108 ICT, it is a two-page document, and it's broken up into two parts. We have first rationale and then eligibility. So let's go ahead and start with rationale. So we've given our clients a checklist, if you will, of rationale options that they can choose from. And there's two notes at the front end of the rationale section. First note says that if your reasoning is primarily rooted in COVID-19, your approval is going to be for the current audit only. If it's rooted in other factors, it's possible that we may be able to approve you for a remote audit on an ongoing basis. The second note indicates that if prior audits have resulted in auditor feedback that you were not a satisfactory candidate for remote audits, if there were connectivity issues, if you have a lot of hard copy records, et cetera, your request for a remote audit will not be approved. So that's kind of a word of warning, if you will. Now, over the next couple of slides, we're going to go over what these different rationale options are. Now, please note that the content from F108 ICT has been provided in italicized text with my own commentary following in plain text. Let's go over the kind of the COVID options first. You can flag that you've had people test positive for COVID, or that you have a no visitor policy, or perhaps you're in an area where there's government travel restrictions. We don't have any of those that I'm aware of here in the United States anymore, but some of our international clients, this may still be a factor. Now, those options are only going to be accepted if there is less than 30 days to go to the start of your audit. The logic behind that is if you've had a recent COVID case and your audit is 6 months out, it doesn't really make a whole lot of sense to approve a virtual audit on the basis of a case that will be 6 months old at the point that the audit takes place. You may say that your auditor or PJR specifically requested a virtual audit. That also is happening from time to time. Now, we are working to limit the instances where that is the case, but we do recognize some members of our auditing team are unwilling, or in more cases, unable to travel. Some of them have their own health issues. Some of them have family health issues and so forth. Obviously, we're trying to be sensitive to that wherever possible. But understand that option can only be selected if you are prompted by your scheduler and or your auditor. Also be aware we are following up on that internally and verifying that that is indeed the case. Now, this is an interesting set of options here. You might have a business model where most of your team is already working remotely. Could be that you have an administrative scope of activity. You could be doing data processing, or you could be working in software development, et cetera. And obviously, if that's what you're claiming, we're going to take a look at your scope statement. We're going to take a look at past audit records and kind of bear out, again, the validity of what you've indicated. Option could be that you're asking for a hybrid audit. You only want a portion of the audit to be done virtually, and we'll ask you to specify what you mean by that. We're going to go over hybrid audits more in depth in a couple of slides here. We do have one final option if you happen to manufacture a tangible product, and that is you can indicate that you've had past successful virtual audits with PJR and that you have a mature quality management system. Now, again, we will verify the validity of your claim by looking at your scope statement and looking at past audit records. We're not approving every one of these that comes through, of course, but it is an option that is available as applicable. Now, in terms of rationale options that will not be accepted, obviously, travel is more expensive now than it was before, but this is not a reason to approve a virtual audit. Also, if just because last year's audit was virtual, that does not automatically mean we can approve it to be virtual again this year. We recognize it may be more convenient for your team, but again, it has to be a risk-based approach. And as much as we recognize that your sales rep or your scheduler might be making promises along these lines or what sounds like promises, understand that our technical team has to approve the virtual request, and also understand that our ongoing preference is always going to be to perform an on-site audit. Particularly for organizations that manufacture a tangible product. The data shows that these virtual audits are not as effective as an on-site audit, particularly in production environments. So from rationale, we then go on to part two, which is eligibility. And the first four questions under eligibility, these are carryovers from the older version of the form. Firstly, is either GoToMeeting or Microsoft Teams going to be acceptable for you? If they aren't, you need to tell us what the alternative is. Does your system support a virtual audit? In other words, are your records primarily electronic? Are you running normal operations based on your scope of certification? Do you have hardware and Wi-Fi coverage or cell signal? Are we going to be allowed to live stream from all areas of your facility? Moving on, are you going to allow the auditor to perform live video interviews with your staff members? Please note, telephone interviews are not an acceptable substitute for video interviews. Do you have the technical capability to support the remote audit? Can you troubleshoot connectivity issues? Have you gone through a virtual audit in the past? Have there been any significant changes in your management system since the last audit? And if you happen to be an R2v3 transition client, are you going to commit to uploading the required documents at least 7 days before the first day of the audit? Now, there are some key takeaways from the F108 ICT. Firstly, there is more than one reason to have a virtual audit. Now, our long-term plan for virtual auditing was always to expand it beyond emergency use. We have a lot of clients that have business models that are a natural fit for remote auditing. And the key we've always felt is capturing a satisfactory rationale in a traceable manner. Also, the client has a responsibility to ensure that the remote audit is successful. Again, recognizing that on-site audits are an option in a lot of circumstances, we really need our client to sell us on their ability not only to participate in a remote audit, but for the remote audit to be as effective as the on-site audit. So to make this perfectly clear, we have to have the following three things. First of all, there must be live chat over a person-to-person interface with live sharing of the auditee screen. Your records must be primarily electronic. We do allow some exceptions in a couple of cases. And finally, if production is going to be assessed, it must include live streaming of the production areas with real-time interactions between the auditor and the production staff. These are minimum requirements for virtual audit approval. Now, if you are requesting a virtual audit for something other than COVID-19 and you've had strong capabilities and experience in hosting a remote audit, it is possible that we will approve you for virtual audits permanently. Now, in that situation, in that scenario, it would have to be for a business model that does not have any manufacturing or other shop floor type activities. This is strictly administrative type businesses that are getting these full virtual permanent approvals. However, we are also giving partial permanent approvals. In other words, up to 50% of your audit potentially being approved to be virtual permanently. Again, this has to be from organizations that have a strong history of successful virtual audits with auditor feedback that is saying the same thing, that this is a good candidate for permanent approval. Now, again, the feedback we've gotten, both anecdotal and data-driven, has shown us that remote auditing of production and shop floor areas is simply not as effective as on-site auditing. So accordingly, our strategy is always going to include an aspect that will require on-site auditing for an organization's production area. Now, obviously, emergency approval is still an option, but the justification needs to be more robust. You can't just state COVID-19 as your logic. The rationale needs to be more detailed than that. And you will be required to prepare a new F108 ICT for every other audit that you want done virtually, if that is what you are requesting. As I mentioned earlier, we are now offering hybrid audits. Now, there are some options, some situations rather, where a hybrid audit can be a real advantage. It can contribute to some cost savings, some scheduling flexibility. So a hybrid audit means that some portion of the audit is going to be done virtually and some portion of it is going to be done on site. So let's look at some possibilities. Let's say that you have a five-day audit that's going to be performed. On the first 2 days, the auditor works remotely. They look at your administrative areas, things like management review, internal audit, sales, and so forth. And then for the last 3 days of the audit, they go on site and they look at production and other key technical areas. That is a hybrid audit. Another possibility, let's say that you have a four-day audit to be performed. Your first auditor does the administrative aspects of the audit on days 1 and 2, and concurrently, you have another audit who's on site looking at the production areas, also on days 1 and 2. So the audit is done in 2 days with an audit team, but one of the team members happens to be working remotely. It's also possible that you may have a revisit be done virtually. Let's say that you've had an on-site audit that has resulted in multiple majors and requires a revisit. The revisit gets done 100% virtually because all majors are rooted in administrative areas. Last option, let's say that you've had an audit and the auditor learns that you've had a headcount increase that has led to an additional half day of required audit time. Now, that additional audit time is going to be performed concurrently, perhaps, by a remote auditor, so that the audit still wraps up at what you had originally thought was going to be the end date and time. Now, in terms of understanding what is a virtual audit, I want to make a real key point here. Virtual auditing is not accomplished by the auditor being emailed everything for offsite review. Among other things, MD4 requires that adequate controls be put in place to avoid abuses that would compromise the integrity of the audit assessment process. Now, if you are selecting all the audit samples yourself as the client, that principle is not met. And that includes situations where the client is giving the auditor everything via a Dropbox or a Google Drive or something along those lines. If an audit is going to be truly virtual and meet all the requirements from the IAF and the ISO, the auditing technique has to mimic what would happen if the auditor was on site. So that means random sampling and all the other auditing techniques must still be in effect in a virtual assessment. Again, offsite auditing is not the same as a truly virtual audit. Now, if we review the information and we conclude that a virtual audit is not going to be possible, and you're in a situation where an on-site audit is also not possible, we would again look to ID3 on what we should do with that situation. Basically, if the audit cannot be done on time, what do we do? Let's look back and see what the options are. If it happens to be a surveillance audit, the first surveillance audit following certification, you may or may not be aware that ISO 17021 requires that once you get certified the first time, that first surveillance audit has to take place no more than 12 months from the certification decision date. In other words, the date that your certificate was issued. Now, ID3 says that if sufficient evidence has been collected to provide confidence that the management system is effective, consideration may be given to postpone the first surveillance for a period not normally exceeding 6 months or 18 months from the date of the initial certification. So I'll give you some notes on what we mean by sufficient evidence to provide confidence in a couple of slides here. Now, if your upcoming audit is a surveillance assessment, just a regular surveillance assessment, you've been certified for a few years already and you're due for surveillance. Remember that surveillance audits have to be conducted once a calendar year. So in other words, let's say your audit is due in January, can't go on site, can't go virtually. You can push out. You can have an audit in February, in March, in April, and so forth. Now, if you're a quarter four client, you know, if we're talking about November or December, again, we do have some reasonable flexibility in performing the audit, some things that we can do in that situation. Lastly, if your upcoming audit is a recertification assessment, and again, we've decided that neither a virtual nor an on-site audit can be done. This is very similar to what we looked at two slides ago. Remember that your recertification activities have to be completed before the expiry of your certificate. Now, in extreme circumstances, that means that the audit itself can be completed before certificate expiry, but it will lead to a lapse. In other words, if as long as we complete the audit the day before your certificate expires, that's considered acceptable. But again, ID3 has a provision that we can extend the certification for up to 6 months, provided we have sufficient evidence to provide confidence. There's that verbiage again. So let's unpack that verbiage. What do they mean by sufficient evidence to provide confidence? What they mean by that is if the risk of continuing certification is low and based on collected information, the certification body can do a short-term assessment. So when we talk about collected information, what we're referring to are the bulleted items at the bottom of this slide here. Management review, corrective action, internal audits, test and inspection reports. We can look at these items and potentially approve an extension to your current certificate if that's the situation that you find yourself in. So again, to kind of put this in plain English and sum it up, if we can't do an on-site and we can't do a virtual, depending on which audit you're due for, we can look at certain critical information off-site and make one of two decisions. We can delay your first surveillance assessment by up to 6 months, or if applicable, we may be able to extend your current certificate, again, by up to 6 months. So let's pivot now to how the virtual audit process works. We've already kind of scratched the surface on this, but let's go over it kind of in a more formal sense now. The protocol that we're going to be going over here is going to be applicable for most of our scopes. I've got them all listed here. For IETF 16949, there is a couple of additional steps. I do have a whole separate webinar that I'll be referencing at the end of the presentation. So if you're an IETF client, I ask that you tune in for that separate webinar specific for your industry. Also for R2, FSSC, and AS9100, there are separate rules in play. You're going to need to check with your scheduler to ascertain your options if you happen to be a client for one of those scopes. So the first step, obviously, is you will be sent the F108 ICT. In most cases, this is going to be sent to you by your scheduler. It's also possible that your scheduler may complete this with you over the phone. You may also receive it from your auditor, but the paperwork needs to be filled in by the client, by the party that's requesting the virtual audit be performed. Now, once we receive the F108 ICT, it's forwarded to a member of the virtual audit assessment team for review and determination of eligibility. And this is going to take on one of a couple forms. We may approve 100% virtual, a portion virtual. It's also possible that none of the audit is going to be reviewed or approved to be done virtually. And this is going to include review of prior virtual audits for assessment of auditor commentary on how well or how poorly the virtual audit went. Now, please note that if your prior auditor indicated that things didn't go well, your request for a virtual audit is most likely going to be denied. Once we've made our decision, we will advise the scheduler and advise them that a date can be set for the virtual portion of the audit. Now, if you are approved for a hybrid audit, in other words, partially virtual and partially on-site, it's possible that the on-site audit will need to be scheduled as well or rescheduled for a later date if that is the situation. Now, once all the virtual audit arrangements are going to be made, a virtual meeting will be set up using either GoToMeeting or Microsoft Teams by a representative here at PJR. Now, please note that if it's a multiple day audit, it will require separate meetings, virtual meetings rather, for each day of the audit. Now, if for whatever reason, GoToMeeting or Microsoft Teams is not going to be used, it is dependent on the client to make the virtual communication arrangements. Now, this needs to be discussed with your auditor in advance of the audit. Now, we do accept all major virtual meeting software programs, WebEx, Zoom, what have you. The only program we don't accept is the free version of Skype. Now, just a technical note, GoToMeeting and Teams both have terrific smartphone apps that will make things easier for shop floor assessments. Speaking of GoToMeeting, we have created multiple accounts within GoToMeeting to ensure that audits can be done, that we have the resources. In a lot of cases, those accounts have been assigned to individual auditors who are doing numerous audits for PJR. Now, you will be sent an email for accessing the virtual meeting on the date of the audit. If we're using GoToMeeting, there's going to be a link you can follow for testing your technical capabilities, things like microphones, speakers, and so forth. We do encourage you to check things out and make sure that you're able to support the audit virtually. You should expect, obviously, to receive an audit plan from your auditor, highlighting the portions of the audit that are going to be performed virtually. We have gone to some great lengths to emphasize the importance of an audit plan to our auditor team. Obviously, if you're working remotely and you're trying to coordinate folks, having a detailed audit plan is going to make that a little easier for you. Like any other audit plan, we definitely encourage you to take a careful, detailed look at the audit plan when you receive it to make sure that both you and your team are ready on audit day. Now, in terms of what is ideally reviewed in the context of a virtual audit, well, one of the things that we've tried to do, where possible, especially if it's a surveillance audit, we've tried to move anything production related to the next audit, if that is an option for us, or if it was looked at on the prior on-site audit. That's also helpful. So this leaves things that are administrative in nature, training, corrective action, order entry, reviewing the website. These are all things that lend themselves best, if you will, to a virtual audit environment. Now, if the auditor absolutely has to review the production area in the context of the virtual audit, a couple of things you can do to help the auditor. If you have a shop floor plan, a map, if you will, send that to your auditor. That can be very helpful so the auditor kind of has a sense of where they are in the context of the audit process. If you have a list of procedures, procedures are obviously not required in ISO 9001, but if you happen to have them, this is something else the auditor can use in a preparation capacity. And when you get to audit day, we ask that you get on the remote interface, say 10 to 15 minutes in advance, just to make sure that you're logged in and you're ready to go. Bear in mind, most of these remote interfaces permit several people to be joined in at the same time, so you can definitely have a big group as needed during the audit process. A couple of technical reminders. Once the audit has started, you're going to want to make sure that your audio and visual settings are working properly. Any computer with a built-in microphone will work sufficiently, but you may find it optimal to use a computer headset. Now, if the video is working but the audio is not, you can call the auditor on a cell phone or a landline to facilitate the audio communication. Now, please note that implies simultaneous usage, not substitute usage. The auditor still needs to have eyes on things via the remote audit software. And again, random sampling is still required. This is one of the key principles in the auditing process and something that we're looked at very carefully by the accreditation bodies. The screen sharing capabilities that are offered by the virtual meeting software are intended to make it feasible for your auditor to review your screen and select the items they want to review during the audit. The auditor must select their own audit samples as if they were on site. And again, off-site auditing and virtual auditing are absolutely not the same thing, and one is never to be taken for the other. In terms of the audit report, if the entire audit was done virtually and no on-site portion will be done later, the full audit package will be turned over to you in accordance with our established policy on audit package preparation. So all the usual things, the audit report, the audit plan, the acceptance of findings, et cetera, all of these will be provided to you. Now, if you are doing a hybrid audit, and there's a portion of the audit that's going to be done on site at a later date, your audit package will be provided upon completion of that on-site portion. Now, obviously, we can provide documented verification of a virtual portion completion for any client who happens to need it. In terms of non-conformances, In terms of non-conformances, it is business as usual for any non-conformance issued in the context of a virtual audit. You are still required to provide the full four-part response as outlined on our standard non-conformity report. Please note that if you are in a hybrid audit where there's going to be an on-site portion done a few days or weeks later, you cannot simply fix the issue and have the non-conformance go away. We still require a full-blown corrective action for for any identified nonconformance. Now, any timing requirements pertaining to nonconformances are still in effect, 60 days, et cetera, from full completion of the audit. Sector-specific rules also remain in effect where applicable. In conclusion, we are absolutely committed to ensuring a continuance of certification for our valued clients. We thank you all for your part in ensuring that auditing can continue when there are difficult circumstances. I'd like to invite you to tune in for one of our other webinars. The IATF, Common Audit Report Application, or CARA, and remote auditing. This is an examination of virtual auditing specific to the automotive industry, as well as an exploration of the CARA report format. Also, the interaction of processes and its importance to a successful audit. This is an unpacking of one of the more crucial topics in the auditing process and what our expectations are therein. And we've got webinars on a wide variety of other topics, corrective action, stage one auditing, etc. If you'd like to be kept informed of the latest news automatically, the best way for you to do that is to visit our website at www.pjr.com. Go to the bottom of the page, enter your email address in the provided space, and click subscribe. You will be opted in for news updates on things like revisions to the standards, upcoming webinars, and other points of information. I do thank you for your time. I'm going to go ahead and unlock the question portion of the dashboard. As a reminder, if you'd like to get a copy of the slides, they will be available from our website shortly. And if you'd like to rewatch this webinar with the voiceover, it will be posted to our YouTube page shortly as well. So let's see if we have any questions today. Okay, we have a question from Willie Robinson. Willie, bear with me. I'm going to kind of unpack your question here. You say you've gone through two acquisitions. That's quite a lot to go through in a short period of time. People are not being asked to move to a location but work from home. Okay, offices are closing. Personnel supporting a central location may work out of state. How would you conduct the audit? It's not cost effective to have dozens of people working remotely to travel for 3 days for an audit. Willie, if your people are working from home, put it to you this way. If a significant number of your team is working from home, we can certainly support, at minimum, a hybrid audit. If there's still an element of on-site activity, we would want to come into your facility if possible. Absolutely, if your team is working remotely, PJR's expectation is not that those folks need to come into your facility just for the audit itself, if that's not where they would ordinarily be working. Very good question. Jane Prazak, we have four crews or shifts. Is there a requirement to interview all four crews during research or surveillance? If so, could we set up a hybrid that would be on site in the morning, virtual in the afternoon? Shane, first part of your question, yes, we are required to include all shifts or crews, as you say, during the research audit for sure. And we are supposed to try to hit everybody over the surveillance cycle. So not necessarily at every audit, but certainly over the period of the cycle. I'm sure we can work something out with you in terms of either a hybrid option or more likely having one of your surveillances be remote and one of them be on site. The remote audit would then focus more on the administrative aspects and the on-site would look more at the production areas. Jeff Ruth asks, how long does it take to get a waiver approved? We do have a four-person crew that works through those approvals, Jeff. We do try to get to them as soon as they're received, but we are still getting a certain volume of them. Definitely, if the audit is taking place in a few days, we will jump on that. That much I can assure you. You're quite welcome, Willie. Not a problem. Any other questions today? Everyone have a great holiday season with your families, and thank you very much.